thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
Tag on the right wing to Crosby. Full check away, and now the counter. Here come the Caps. Kuznetsov gets loose. Evgeny coming down the middle. A shot, and it comes in over. He scores! Evgeny Kuznetsov wins it for Washington! It's off to the third round! The Demons have been exercised! Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, Pittsburgh! We're going to Tampa Bay! The Capitals have done it! They slayed the Penguins! All of the heartache! All of the Demons! The two-time defending champions are going home! And the Capitals are moving on for the first time in 20 years!
You're listening to the, you're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I know, right? You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I'm here with Ray. We're waiting on Will T. I'm Wally. Manny Caps, they did it. You know what I'm saying? DMVs, they lit. It's lit right now.
And I like the body language after the game.
Uh-huh.
These guys won a Stanley Cup. This was not enough for them. Because most of the time, when you get that monkey off your back, a la LeBron James versus the Boston Celtics. Remember he finally knocked him out first year with the Heat?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then went on to lose the championship to the Dallas Mavericks that year. But at the time where LeBron James got that and the Heat got that victory over the Celtics, LeBron was just like, man, that's a great team. Like, he was so excited to have finally beaten them that he lost, I think, his focus on what the bigger goal was. To me, the Caps look like a team that was the opposite of that last night.
No,
they look satisfied, but they got more to accomplish.
I'm with you on that. They definitely have more to accomplish. I'm happy for Ovi. Ovi is a guy that has gotten criticized in this area and then even in the national media for not coming big in the postseason, and he definitely did that. But we're still waiting on Will T. Will T, before I get into that, on May 11th, Team Gary Russell is holding an open gym workout at Enigma Boxing Gym from 8 to 9:30. I'm going to try to attend that one. You're not going to be able to attend, right, Ray?
I will be there on this coming Thursday for the media session. Gary Russell Jr. still training for his big fight coming up right here in National Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
We're one step closer to being in the building.
I'm
excited about it.
I am too, man.
It also features the younger Gary Antonio Russell and as well as Antoine.
Enigma Gym is located at 9100 Edgeworth Drive, Capitol Heights, Maryland. So make sure you check it out. Into our tradition, the pregame. Here are our topics. We will have WNST's Washington Capitals insider Ed Frankovic to talk about the Caps eliminating the Pittsburgh Penguins last night. At 8:20, we'll talk about the NBA playoffs. At 8:30, we'll talk about the Nationals' hot stretch. I know, right? At 8:40, we'll finally discuss the Washington Redskins schedule. We didn't do that a couple weeks ago, so we'll finally do that. Finally, at the 8:50 mark, we'll talk about middleweight champ Gennady Golovkin's knockout of Vanes Martins. How do you say his name?
Triple G.
But now I say other dude's name. Martirosyan.
You got the juice.
There you go. Martirosyan against Martirosyan. He knocked him out in the second round. But right now, we have Ed Frankovic. What's going on, Ed?
Hey, fellas, what's happening?
What's going on?
Everything's good. I know you're excited, Ed. How does it feel to see this team finally eliminate the Pittsburgh Penguins?
I tell you what, when that goal went in, it was such an amazing breakaway, and I couldn't tell what happened with the shot, and then I saw the referee pointing, and I saw Cousy doing his Morris Day in the tie. I was just ecstatic. You know why he does that? He says his daughter likes when he does that, so that's why he brought the celebration back. But a little more stay in the time there, and just a huge, huge win to beat the Penguins in Game 6 with all of those guys out of the lineup. Nicklas Backstrom out of the lineup. Tom Wilson suspended. Andrei Burakovsky out. Five rookies in the lineup, a bunch of Hershey players, and they just played the system to a T. And just knocked the defending champs out. I don't think they'll win. And it just goes to show in a team sport, when you play the system and you play together and you play as a team, that's when you win. And I couldn't be happier for that group.
You mentioned this. How did and you know, not having Nicklas Backstrom play, a guy that's a two-way player who can play defense and offense, and he's one of the best assist guys in hockey. How did they do it without having him in Game 6?
Well, I think when you and I and all of us talked before the series, I said my keys to the series were Kuznetsov, Ovi, and Holpe. I knew what I was going to get out of Nicholas Backstrom, but Kuznetsov was the wild card, and he really wasn't a big factor in the series for the first three games. And when you look at games two and three, Nicholas Backstrom really took the series over. But when Backstrom went out, they needed somebody to step up, and it had to be Kuznetsov, and he did it. And he took his game to another level. That third period of game five, where he scores the goal early on to tie it up, and then the whole building just went nuts. You could feel, for the first time, I think, in several years, you could feel amazing positive energy in the Capital One Arena. And he just played a physical game, a strong two-way. Lars Eller under the hood, underneath the covers there, just played a great second-line center, stepping up in Backstrom's absence. And the Capitals really just took away the Penguins' rush game. They didn't allow them to get odd-man rushes. They stayed out of the box. And any time they got by and got a shot, Holpe was there. I mean, the only thing that beat him was kind of an own goal, deflection off a faceoff. So the keys we talked about before the series came true. And my hat's off to Evgeny Kuznetsov. We knew he had this ability. This is his fourth year in the league, fourth year in the playoffs. And he seemed to figure it out, as did a lot of other guys. And that's why they won.
Ed, I can hear the excitement in your voice. The energy is just great coming from you tonight. And as we mentioned, we're happy for Alexander Ovechkin to finally get this kind of monkey off his back as part of a Hall of Fame career. But how do you feel as far as your emotions for Barry Trotz, a guy who is underrated, I think, to some degree, has had some success, not just here in Washington, but also Nashville. How do you feel for him getting that monkey off his back as well?
Well, I'm glad you asked me about that, because I've known Trotsky since the 80s when he was in the Capitals organization. And as you remember, David Poile was the GM here for a lot of years. And when he went to Nashville in the big purge that happened here in 97, he took Trotsky with him. And I've always thought Trotsky was going to be a very good coach. He coached in Baltimore, did well. He went to Portland. They won a Calder Cup. And he just never really had the horses in Nashville. A lot of that was because of money. But there were a few years where they were finally able to spend some money. But to come here, and he's really turned this franchise around. You remember what a disaster this team was that last year under Adam Oates and George McVie, where they missed the playoffs. They were fighting with each other. They made a bunch of trades for a bunch of goalies. They ticked off Holpe. And Trotsky kind of came in here and stabilized everything. And they brought in Brooks Orpik, and they got Ovi and Holpe turned around. And so I couldn't be happier for the guy, because he's taking a lot of heat. He's like Ovechkin. He and Ovechkin and Backstrom were all in this together. They've been through a lot of losses, and they had never made it to the third round. So Trotsky's right in there with those two guys, and I think that helped Ovechkin and Backstrom, because they had another guy, the coach, that didn't understand it, and he was taking some of the heat as well. So I think the way they went through, with Ovi making the pass to Kuznetsov, and the way Trotsky coached that last game, they played the system. The players all bought in. And they played, it was a boring style game, but that was the only way you're going to beat Pittsburgh with that lineup, was to throttle the neutral zone, throttle the blue line, don't let them come in, don't give them rush opportunities, stay out of the box and wait for your chances. And that's exactly what happened. And they absolutely deserved that win in that game. They outplayed Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh's own barn in a game they had to have to keep their streak alive. And now the Penguins are going golfing.
So speaking of Ovi, in the past, many have said Ovi wasn't a big-time playoff performer. Do you think now that talk is now shut down, because Ovi definitely had a good first round and definitely was clutch in the second-round matchup with the Penguins?
Well, you know, that's a great question, and you don't even need to hear my answer. I'm going to tell you a guy who provided the answer, and an impartial person by the name of Michael Rupp, who played in the NHL for Pittsburgh. He played for the Devils, and he played for the New York Rangers. And he, on TV, on NHL Network, following the win last night, basically said, that's a load of garbage that Ovi is not a playoff performer. He goes, you look at his stats, he's over a point a game. He has done everything he could to try and get his team to the third round. Now, granted, last season, he was out of shape. He got injured, and it was probably his worst playoffs. And I would say probably last year was Braden Holpe's worst playoffs. These two guys made it a point to get themselves in the proper conditioning and mindset, and it showed. And both of these guys have had their best playoffs, and that's why they're in the third round.
So we mentioned Holpe. Again, you know, it's a guy that has played unbelievable since the benching. Would you say he's been the MVP of the series?
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. And I think if you look at the five teams right now left in the playoffs, there's two goalies that are standing out head and shoulders above all the others. and that's Brayden Holpe and Marc-Andre Fleury with Vegas. And we knew who basically shut the Capitals down last season. The Capitals outplayed. Yeah, the Capitals outplayed Pittsburgh last year, but Fleury was better. And the year before, it was Matt Murray was better. And this year, Brayden Holpe turned the tables, and he was better than Matt Murray by far. And that's why the Capitals are moving on.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene right now. We have WNST's Capitals insider, Ed Frankovic, on the line. So the Caps have the Tampa Bay Lightning next. How do they match up against the Lightning?
Well, it's going to be a tough series, guys. They are going to be the heavy underdogs, especially with Nicklas Backstrom's situation up in the air. We don't know how bad his right hand is. We know he has a right hand injury. We don't know if he's going to be able to grip a stick by the end of the week to be able to play. And the good news is it is his top hand. It's easier to play with an injured top hand, bottom hand. So if Nicky can get some leverage in that hand where he can hold the stick, he won't be taking faceoffs anymore, but you'll see Chandler Stephenson taking faceoffs there. But this Tampa team is super fast, guys. But the thing is, the Capitals have really transformed themselves into a faster team. All these guys that came up from Hershey, Chandler Stephenson, Jacob Brana, you saw Nathan Walker, the Australian, play his first game in Game 6. These guys are fast, and they're going to need that against the Tampa Bay Lightning that has, you know, Nikita Kucherov and Steven Stamkos and Tyler Johnson, all these guys that can fly. So Tampa's going to be the favorites. And I kind of like that. I like being the underdog. We've seen the underdogs win in sports so often because the pressure is not on them. The pressure is on Tampa. This is a team that went to the Stanley Cup Finals just 3 years ago, and then the next year they faced the Penguins in the Eastern Conference Final, had a 3-2 lead in games and lost that series to the Penguins. Penguins went on to win the Cup. So they have an axe to grind. They're going to be motivated. They're a very good team. They made a bunch of trades. This season, they've got four former New York Rangers who the Capitals will be very familiar with, Ryan McDonough, Dan Girardi on defense, and then up front, Ryan Callahan and JT Miller. So this is a team the Capitals are familiar with. It's a very good team. The number one record in the Eastern Conference. Going to be a heck of a matchup, guys.
Hey, Ed, remember back in 98, back in the Peter Bonja era, when the Caps were swept by the Red Wings in the Stanley Cup Finals, and following that last game, it was said, Washington is now a hockey town. I didn't think it was true at the time. Are you feeling that way now based on the amount of attention the Caps have garnered over the past several years, as good as they've been, but finally advancing to a conference finals?
Yeah, I think you were right that it wasn't a hockey town yet in 1998. I don't think it was there yet. I don't think they had that star appeal in their lineup to make it a hockey town. I mean, Ole Kolzig was the star, but he was the goalie. I think it's more of a hockey town now because of Ovi. I think Ovi's put hockey on the map here and really taken it to a new level. And if they somehow can beat Tampa, and that's going to be a daunting task, but if they can somehow beat Tampa and get into the finals and then, you know, who knows what happens there, if they somehow win a cup, it will be a hockey town. But they got to win a cup, I think. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, I agree. I think they have to win a cup for it to kind of change the whole thought process of this team. In terms of popularity, I think they're already popular enough, to be honest with you, because you could tell after they beat the Penguins, especially on social media, how much, you know, how many people, how many fans, how many folks from the DMV supported this team. So I think it's definitely growing.
Yeah, it does. But to be honest with you, I think this is a pro football town first with the Redskins and the Ravens, the two towns. Pro football is king. But there's an opportunity here because the Redskins have certainly not been well for several years.
So true.
And the Ravens, you know, I'm a Ravens guy, but they've been on the decline for a few years here. And hockey has a chance to step up and grab the attention. The Orioles are tire fire, as a friend of mine called them tonight. I think they gave up 10 runs in the first inning tonight. So, but the Nationals are good, but they haven't won a playoff series. The Redskins haven't, you know, really done anything in years. So, this is a big, big opportunity for the Capitals to seize the attention of the town. I know the Wizards have been on the upswing, but they haven't been able to break through to the third round either. So this is a huge step and an opportunity for the Capitals. But, you know, there's plenty of sports in town. But for Ovi to go on and these guys to win a cup, boy, that would put them on a new level, and that would really change things, I think, around here.
Well, Ed, we'll be watching just like last night. I think at least in the D.C. metro area, LeBron James came second in ratings last night.
I think so. It seemed like it. Oh, yeah, it definitely seemed like it. So, Ed, real quick before I let you go, I just have a question in terms of speed. I know this Tampa Bay team is really fast. How do they compare to the Toronto Maple Leafs, the team they played last year? They were really fast as well. That was a super fast team last year.
I would say they're just as fast, if not faster.
Wow, they're faster than Toronto.
They have up front. They are faster.
Okay, wow.
On the back end, they've got some slower guys. Girardi, McDonough. These are super fast guys. But their best defenseman, Victor Hedman, is a stud from Sweden on the back end. Can really move the puck.
Uh-huh.
But up front, they are as fast as it comes in the National Hockey League. They're a lot like Vegas. They just go. They don't stop. And they keep coming at you in waves. So the Capitals are going to have to really keep playing that smart north-south hockey they've been playing. They've really gotten out the cross-ice pass out of their game in the playoffs. And that's another big reason why they've been successful. If they can keep away from the turnovers and the odd man rushes, they're going to have a chance. If they get into Tampa's game of back and forth trading chances, it's going to be over pretty quickly unless Holtby like is inhuman to because this team has firepower all over the place and they're a lot more rested than Pittsburgh.
Oh, great. Well, thanks, Ed. Hopefully we'll have you on next week. Okay. Thanks again.
I look forward to it. It's always a pleasure talking with you, man.
All right. Thank you.
Take care, Wally.
Take care. Again, that is Ed. That's WNST's Caps insider, Ed Frankovic. Great guy. So excited about
Caps. I think Will T jinxed the Capitals in a good way.
I know. It's all about Will, man.
He was confident they will get eliminated. Man, he had to talk hockey no more.
I know,
more.
Right?
Now it's just growing.
Will.
This is great.
Can you talk hockey with me, man?
All of you all who are supporting this team now are bandwagon fans.
Look, I've always supported the team.
First and foremost, let's be honest.
Oh, come on.
No,
I know, right?
No. Let's be honest. How many people do you think who tuned into that game would spend their night watching a regular season Caps game if there was nothing on the line?
Say nothing on the line?
If there was nothing, it was just a regular season game.
That doesn't make you a bandwagon.
It does make you bandwagon.
No, I used to.
It absolutely does.
Like I follow the Caps.
And the second thing is, when did the DMV has become so desensitized to winning?
Uh-huh.
When is getting to the conference final a huge accomplishment, something to celebrate?
Well, when you beat the Penguins, the team that knocks you out consistently.
No, this is what I'm saying. This is how this area has become, or as I like to say, area has become desensitized to winning.
No, that's
losing coaches
crap.
Around
when
here.
It comes to this, I don't agree. Like, it's like, would you watch a UMBC game during the regular season? But if in a tournament, when they upset a number one seed, it's great to watch. I mean, it's something.
I didn't even watch it then. He was with me. I didn't watch that game.
Right. I didn't watch that game either.
We didn't watch that game.
UMBC,
did you watch any college basketball at the time?
Yes.
Exactly, in the NCAA tournament. You may not watch as much during a regular season.
But this is the thing. I'm not celebrating the victory as if I'm a true fan, because I'm not. I don't care. Unless there's money on the game,
I'm a fan of the team. I grew up a fan of the team. I'm not a diehard fan.
So because people are celebrating, that makes them bandwagon. If they live in this area, that's bandwagon.
It's about time to go LeBron, that's man. We got to talk about LeBron, man. LeBron has been special in this postseason. We'll talk about that. Talk about the NBA playoffs. Special.
Oh, special.
He's been special in this postseason.
Yes, man.
And we'll talk about the NBA playoffs after the break. You listen to the Urban Sports Thing.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
The Raptors.
I got loyalty, got royalty inside my DNA. Quarter piece, got war and peace inside my DNA. I got power, poison, pain, and joy inside my DNA. I got hustle, though, ambition, flow inside my DNA. I was born like this, it's born like this, immaculate conception. I transform like this, perform like this, which yells you a new weapon. I don't contemplate, I meditate, then off your head. This that put the kids to bed, this that I got realness. I just kill shit, cause it's in my DNA. I got millions, I got riches building in my DNA. I got dark, I got evil that rot inside my DNA. I got off, I got trouble, some heart inside my DNA. I just win again, then win again, like Wimbledon I serve. Yeah, that's him again, the sound, the engine, and it's like a bird. You see fireworks, they Corvette tire skirt, the boulevard. I know how you work, I know just who you are. See, use a your hormones probably switch inside your DNA. All that sucker shit inside your DNA. Daddy probably snitch. Heritage inside your DNA. Backbone don't exist. Burn on side a jellyfish I gauge. See my pedigree, most definitely don't tolerate the front. Shit I've been through probably offend you. This is Barla's oldest son. I know murder, conviction, furnace, boosters, burglars, ballers, dead, redemption.
Egyptian scholars, fathers dead with kids, and I wish I was fed forgiveness. Yeah. Soldiers DNA, born inside the beast.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with me, Wally, Will T, and Ray. Check out the Football Garbage Time podcast at www.footballgarbagetime.com. The Cavs eliminated the Raptors last night to advance to the Eastern Conference Finals.
They swept them.
That's true. So that's true. Why did the Cavs sweep the? Why did they sweep the Raptors?
Why are we talking about this?
Hey man, it's LeBron, man. You gotta give credit where credit's due, man.
I think you got to. I think there's a way that we can tie this in back to DC, sure. And that's just we spoke about it during the commercial break. If you look at the Raptors and you look at the Wizards, right? Mm-hmm. I think they're both teams that have met their ceiling. They've peaked. Mm-hmm. No matter how much we all want to say that the Wizards, you know, they get if John Wall were healthy this year, they would have made it to the second round because of their matchup. No. The Wizards are who they are. The Raptors are who they are. Mm-hmm. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the construct of both of these teams have invested in their backcourt heavily. But the difference is the Wizards also invested in Otto Porter. And with that Otto Porter contract, I don't think that's a contract that's easy to move.
Gortat and even Mahimi, too.
I mean, well, Mahimi, and then you have Gortat. He comes off of the books after next season, if I'm not mistaken.
Yo, Gortat,
he has one more.
He's his trade option's real good. I mean, he's valuable in the sense that he has that, we had 1 year of the last year on his deal, so that's money. He'll be off the books if you trade him. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Wilty.
No, go ahead.
No, I think that the Raptors are in a tight spot, to be honest with you, because Ray and I was talking about this before the show, that at the end of the day, DeRozan can be, you know, your best player. That's cool. I'm not knocking that. But Lowry can't be your number two player if you're trying to be a championship squad. Will T, to your point, is that you already tied that money into Lowry, so what are you going to do? What can you do? And the only person that has true trade value is your best player.
I mean, I'm not letting you – well, I will say this. The difference between the Wizards and the Raptors are the Raptors have a capable GM. The Wizards don't have a capable GM.
He got an extension, too.
I know. That's terrible. That's terrible in my opinion, because you're locked in into mediocrity, you know. And so, you'll celebrate if the Wizards get past the second round of the playoffs.
That's true. Let's get back
to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, I know, right? But let's get back to the actual NBA playoffs. So why, to your point, Ray, to you, Ray, you think that the Cavs swept the Raptors because the Raptors didn't have any heart?
Just based on how every season it seems as though they play much harder, like against the Wizards. Last year was against the Bucks.
Mm-hmm.
And then you finally get a chance at the Cavs. To me, it should have been your Washington Capitals moment where you're like, I'm finally going to knock off a team that is now not as experienced. Mm-hmm. They're younger. They don't have as much chemistry because of the midseason trades. This was an opportunity. LeBron was bleeding. You had an opportunity to kill him, and they didn't. And instead, it's like they bowed to greatness or something. And the reason – don't get me wrong. I, of course, I like LeBron. I've always liked LeBron. But I just feel as though sort of changing gears, that he hasn't had to experience what a lot of the other greats in the Eastern Conference had to experience. Isaiah Thomas and his Pistons squad, they had to take down the Celtics, a Celtics team that had one of the greatest players in NBA history, Larry Bird. Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls had to take down not just Isaiah Thomas and the Pistons to get where they wanted to go, but also Patrick Ewing and the Knicks, who were one of the toughest teams in memory. So who has LeBron over the past 4 years in Eastern Conference had to battle?
The Boston Celtics.
No.
When he was with the Heat, yes. And in his
Detroit
first
Pistons,
I said that over the past 4 years. I understand
the comparable you're trying to make, but during LeBron's, the beginning of his career, he did have to battle. through the Eastern Conference, and he was knocked down a lot.
Yeah. You know?
Over the last 4 years, you're absolutely right. It's been like
a cakewalk.
It's been a cakewalk for him to get to the Eastern Conference Finals and get to the finals for the. We keep hearing that this Washington Wizards team says, "Oh,
we don't want to see.
They don't want to see garbage. Us." But then,
what
do you do? You go out and you get beat 4-2 against the Toronto Raptors.
They got swept.
The Avalanche team swept. I mean, so you know, to your point, Ray, there is some comparables, but you know, if you look at the beginning of his career, he was knocked down a lot. Now the last four, possibly next. We don't know if he resigns in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Possibly could be another case.
No, I look at it like he's the bully on the block now. Like, Jordan was the bully on the block in the East. He's the bully on the block now. That's what it is. To your point.
Because you have a losing record in the finals. Jordan won every finals appearance
because
he went to.
Because arguably, Jordan's team was the... Because Jordan... And to your... Who's your one of your favorite players of all time?
Scottie Pippen.
Okay. Scottie Pippen's a what? In terms of... he's the top, what, 50 player?
Top 50 player.
Like, that team's a bully on the block. Like, LeBron's team that lost, other than the team that lost to the Dallas Mavericks, let's be real, other than that team, right, which was ridiculous. He shouldn't have lost to Dallas Mavericks. Every time went to the finals, he was the underdog, but other than the ones he won, predominantly. He was the underdog.
They lost 4-1 to the Spurs.
They were the underdog. They were the underdog against the Spurs.
How? They were the two-time
defending
NBA champions at
the time. They weren't the favorites going in. Like, when you look at LeBron's losses, other than the Dallas Mavericks, he wasn't the favorite.
Here's my thing. No matter who Jordan played against, I don't care if it was Magic, I don't care if it was Bird, I don't care if it was Isaiah Thomas, you knew the fadeaway was coming and was nothing you were doing about it.
And they were losing.
Let me see.
In the 80s. And they were losing.
What do you mean they were losing?
They were losing in the 80s. They were losing. When you mentioned Magic.
But he's talking about the finals of the 90s.
When those dudes were done. Okay, that was my
Magic
when those
was
dudes
supposed
were
to be done in 91.
He was done. He wasn't the same Magic. He wasn't. And that wasn't even the same team. Worthy was done. They were done. You saw what happened when he left.
Okay,
they were done.
Was Karl Malone and Utah done when he beat them?
I'll give him that. He beat Karl Malone. He beat Karl Malone.
How about Seattle when Sean Kemp was in his prime?
How many championships did Karl Malone win after?
How about
after
Phoenix
LeBron?
When Barkley was in his prime?
Shall
I go on?
Look, how many? This is my point.
You just don't like Jordan.
No. How many championships did Jordan? I'm about to be real. I'm sorry, I did that too. I'm real sorry. How many championships did Patrick? And I love Patrick Ewing. How many championships did Patrick Ewing win after Jordan?
He didn't win anything.
How many championships did Reggie Miller win after Jordan?
None of them won anything.
How many championships did Barkley win after Jordan?
They were done.
So they had the opportunity. My point is.
Ray's rebuttal was valid.
No, I'm saying all I'm saying is they had their chance when
never
he left
let me finish. That's the problem.
To do what they needed to do. That's all I'm saying.
My point is you knew what you was going to get with MJ. And even when the Bulls lost, MJ did his thing. But LeBron against Golden State, whoever, he's not dropping fadeaways over people. He's
dropping fadeaways now.
Against the Raptors, yes.
Why are you hating on the Raptors? Will Tita told you. The Raptors had the best record in what conference? They're the best record in the East, right?
Conference, yes.
They beat teams like Golden State in the regular season. So wouldn't that say they're a good team?
No. Because LeBron James, when he was losing to the point y'all just made, his team was number one Eastern Conference all
the
daggone time.
So is the Utah Jazz with Stockton and Malone, were they a good team?
Absolutely.
Did they win a championship?
No, because they ran into Jordan. That's why.
They had an opportunity. They had an opportunity when Jordan retired, didn't they?
Against who?
I mean, when he left the first time.
Against who?
When the Houston Rockets won a championship with Olajuwon on them, they had an opportunity, right? So were they that good to win a championship? They had an opportunity. Jordan left. They had an opportunity. Elijah beat Shaq.
No, I'm saying
you had your regardless the people that you mentioned, they had their opportunity. That's my point.
This is ridiculous.
My point is they had their opportunity. That is my point.
Who, the Raptors?
No. You're talking about how Barkley and all these individuals. I mentioned Karl Malone. Like, you're trying to get Karl Malone and Stockton credit, right? For Jordan beating. And they should. No, I'm saying they should. Toronto is a good team. They just lost LeBron.
No,
you can't say that winning with 59 games they won this season.
Yes,
that is not a bad team.
Here's my thing: when you know you got somebody's number, it don't matter.
True,
it don't matter what they
do. I agree.
Michigan can be the best team in college football.
I hate you.
But when Ohio State walks in there, they know they're gonna win.
I hate you for that one.
For real,
it's a very good point.
I remember it's in every rivalry. I'm not going to use the Washington one. I'll use Duke, North Carolina. You know I grew up a North Carolina fan,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
But Duke knows at times, most of the time, except for like the Hansborough years where they were clearly outmatched. Mm-hmm. I don't care if you got Vince, Jameson. They knew that they always had a chance against Carolina because they just have that confidence when they go in because they've had the upper hand for the last, 20 years in that rivalry. So what I'm saying is LeBron James, there was no reason for him to be concerned about Toronto. None at all. Even if they were number one, he didn't care. It's the same way when he was with the Heat and the Pacers got the number one seed one year and they weren't tripping. They're like, so what? We feel like we can win in Indiana. And he knew they could win in Toronto.
Yeah.
And they just, again, came off a 7-game series where they showed how vulnerable they were. The Raptors were soft. The Raptors had no heart. And LeBron James knew it. And he took whatever little bit of heart they did have.
Yeah, after game one.
He took their heart.
After game one, the series was done.
It was.
To be honest with you. And I was rooting for Toronto. I thought Toronto would get game one.
Yeah.
I thought they would get with game one, and then mentally they would say, okay, we could do this. But once I saw that body language after game one,
yeah,
I knew it was over.
Look at the issues. Okay, you battled back in game three, right? You battled back in game three.
Yes.
You tied the game up. You hit a big three-pointer within the last 10 seconds. And then you defend LeBron one-on-one to close the game out.
Should
How dumb was that?
That shot was tough,
Force Clarkson or Love or somebody to make a
but
big
real
shot.
Talk, that shot was tough, though. That was a horse
it
shot,
It was one-on-one.
That was a tough shot, though.
But to Ray's point, that goes to show
coaching,
the details.
Yeah.
It's coaching. It's
no,
detail.
I agree. Like, I agree with that.
How could LeBron get the ball in the coffin corner and he not be trapped?
Oh, you're talking about in the inbound. Inbound. That was stupid.
How could he
that
get the
dumb.
Ball over in the corner
that was
and he not be trapped? Why weren't there two people? Why wasn't there a defender engaged in front of him? So if LeBron wanted to come forward, he would have had to push off.
Mm-hmm.
Then you could have got an
offensive
foul.
No, I agree.
And then another man over the top trapping.
I'm telling you, we're going to see. It's going to be Boston or Philly, obviously. But two good defensive teams. Boston's really good defensively. We'll see if he's hitting fadeaways over everybody. He's going to do his thing because he's LeBron James. I'm just saying. The Raptors, to me, they're invalid. I'm sorry. And you know what? I will say this, and I'll let you go to break.
Mm-hmm.
I did think the Raptors were a better team this year. I can't be a hypocrite because I talked about it on TV, actually. Well, I don't think that's aired. It aired. But the point is, I talked about it.
Yeah.
I put it on record.
Yeah,
I thought they were a better team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought maybe this is a time for them to push LeBron to the brink. But they always lose, like, every game.
No, I agree with you. I'm the same guy, and four-two the year before that.
It's a 10-game losing streak to the Cavs.
It's ten games. It's ridiculous.
I'm the same guy. I'm the same guy who said that Toronto would beat Cleveland. I was wrong.
I was the same guy.
I felt like they would give him a better match. Look at what Indiana did.
I said I'm the same guy. I said they were gonna lose to Cleveland.
Yeah, Indiana was such a young team.
Indiana played him right though.
Yeah, I don't think there's anyone who said.
Indiana played him right though.
No, I don't think there's anyone who saw that 7-game series against Indiana and didn't say, "Oh,
Toronto got him."
Toronto.
No, I agree. But they played him right. Their game plan was right though. They were right. And plus, Kevin Love didn't show up either for that series. But the Nationals are 8-2 in their last 10 games. We'll talk about their great play of late. You're listening to Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Thank you.
Hold on, yeah.
Don't disrespect
Jordan. We're back from break, man. Just a heated argument after during the break.
Talk about baseball now, because every time that start to win, he starts to bring it up.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Ray. The Orioles are horrible. Subscribe to our podcast. Was it 11 now? It was 10-0 last time we checked. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Make sure you rate us. Leave us a comment. The Nationals have been playing great baseball of late. What is changing your opinion?
A couple of things. One of the things that I think went under the radar was Wilmer Defoe hitting in the 9th spot.
Okay.
Of course, the obvious was Bryce Harper hitting leadoff, getting more pitches.
Yeah, is that permanent now?
I don't think it'll be. I think it'll be in effect until Adam Eaton comes back.
Okay, so how low, I guess, when Eaton gets back, who's going to be the 2 guy? Will it be Bryce or will it be Turner?
I would imagine. I would want them to hit Bryce Harper number 2.
Okay.
But
he's loving number 1 though right now.
Yeah, he's loving. You know, his batting percentage isn't that great, but at least he's getting pitches to hit, and he's knocking them out of the yard when he gets the opportunity to. Then also, starting pitching's been a lot more – it's been stronger outside of course, Max Scherzer. You know, his pitching's been strong all season in Strasburg, but you're getting more consistent pitching from Gio, Tanner Roark, and Jeremy Hellickson is also – he's getting innings – Jeremy Hellickson's getting the innings as the number 5 guy, getting through the rotation twice, through the lineup twice, and has been very solid. So, seeing a lot of different things, a lot of dynamics coming into shape, and everything starting to click for the Nationals.
So, Matt Adams is playing pretty well. 10 home runs, 23 RBIs. When everybody gets healthy, do you think they should consider starting him, or should he just play the role of Adam Lynn and just
start him?
Who's gonna start over?
Zimmerman.
Okay,
that's a good.
I was thinking that too. I was thinking that myself.
That's a good thought.
Like 10 home runs. 10 home runs is 10 home runs at this early. Like, it's hard to bench that, man.
It's really hard.
It's hard to bench that, man.
And one of the things that's gonna be an interesting dynamic, because we're gonna see how Davey Martinez handles that.
Yeah.
Because you know, Dave Martinez doesn't have any loyalty to Ryan Zimmerman.
Mm-hmm.
Like past managers have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've all known that he's been a stalwart for this organization. He's been the cornerstone.
Yeah.
For lack of a better word.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see how he handles that. Does he say, okay, I'm going to do what's best for this team, and I'm going to start Matt Adams until he cools off? Or does he say, well, Zimmerman's been, you know, he's been a cornerstone in this organization since they've come to D.C., so I'm going to continue to trot him out there.
No, I that's the thing I was worried about. I was thinking of, like, but can Matt Adams, could he play outfield?
He's playing left field tonight.
That's Adam Eaton. Once Adam Eaton comes back, that's his spot.
Yep.
How's Michael A. Turner playing?
Bat is always not consistent, but
his
building
defense
is very
so
strong.
Amazing.
He's like, to me, he's like Jason Hayward.
Oh, yeah.
Jason Hayward is solid.
Yeah, his bat is so inconsistent.
Is a great defensive outfielder, but when it comes to at the plate, his struggles, you know, sometimes it makes punch a wall.
I'm looking at the stats right now. Yeah. Ryan Zimmerman should be on the bench. 194.
He's as bad as those pumpkin chips that you got sitting there.
His pumpkin chips bomb, though. He wants some pumpkin. Hey. I gave some pumpkin. He cares. I gave some of these joints, and he tried to fry me. Look, hey, we'll talk. Try one. Hey.
I'll try one.
I'm going to be real. Like, I got so much. Like, I got, you know, Ray is always like, Wally, you don't ever bring no food or nothing. No snacks. Right? So I try to be nice. No, I try to be nice to the show, and this man just fried me. And I'm a taste one too, dog. Just see how I tell.
No, it's no. It'll be interesting. Jeremy Hellickson's and
let Will be there.
He's pitching tonight out in San Diego. The Nats actually have an opportunity tonight if they can get the win tonight, possibly to get a sweep of this series against San Diego. And I think they're only 1 point. They're 1.5 games back from
The Phillies are number one now?
No, Atlanta.
Atlanta? Yeah.
The Braves. So,
it's
things
close.
Start there. Yeah.
The whole race is close.
We knew this division was going to be better this year. But the Mets tapered off a little bit faster than I thought they were.
They have.
But you know what would be interesting? I want to see if this team if they battle back and they get the division, how does that carry over into the playoffs?
This is good for them.
Because every time they've gone to, they've come into the playoffs.
That's real talk.
They've won a division and they've gone and they've had the division on lock with like two or three with three or 4 weeks left in the season. So I'm interested to see when or if they're able to battle back and get the division.
It's almost like the cap situation, to be real with you. I'm gonna tell you why. The Caps have dominated when they had all the talent in the world. Like, they were supposed to be the perennial favorites to get to the Stanley Cup, right? Just off talent alone. And this season, they lost, you know, they lost valuable players. And a lot of people thought they weren't going to make the postseason. But now they struck. They played hard. They grinded out. They were first place in the division. But they went through the struggle. And now they're in the Eastern Conference Finals. This Nats team, because the division looks tougher, they're going to go through the struggle. And now, if they can get to the postseason, win a division, get to the postseason, I think they're battle tested enough to now say, you know what, we can now make it to the World Series or whatever.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, but you're also going to need to make some additions to that bullpen.
Yeah,
because the bullpen's been outside. The only guy who's really been consistently good has been Doolittle. You know, Kitzler's had his hiccups here and there. Madsen's had his hiccups here and there. And then you're also going to need another long reliever.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially if you're going to continue to pitch.
They have great arms in the minor leagues.
That's the minor leagues. Isn't the major.
Yeah, I know. That's true. That's true. I mean, you're going to have to make a move.
If you're only going to pitch Jeremy Hellickson every 5 days, like 5 2/3 innings.
Yeah. I mean, Jeremy Hellickson for fifth guy in the rotation is pretty good.
He's been solid.
Yeah,
he's
for fifth solid. Guy in the rotation
but
is pretty good.
But then you get Joe Ross back.
That's the problem.
August or
see, that's going to be the
August or September.
You may want to make him, depending on how Ross looks, you may want to make him the long man. You know what I mean?
It'll be interesting to see.
All right, we are finally going to talk about the Redskins schedule. It came out like 3 weeks ago. We'll discuss that after the break. Listen to Urban Sports Thing.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
If you wanted to, these expensive, these is red bottoms, these is bloody shoes. Hit the school, I can get them both, I don't wanna choose. And I'm quick, cutting off, so don't get comfortable. Look, I don't dance now, I make money move. Say, I don't gotta dance, I make money move. If I see you now, speak, that means I don't fuck with you. I'm a boss, you a worker, bitch, I make bloody move. Now she say, she gon' do what or who? Let's find out and see. Cardi B, you know where I'm at, you know where I be. You in the club, just to party, I'm there, I get paid a fee. I be in and out them bands so much, I know they tired of me. Honestly, don't give a f*** about who in front of me. Drop 2 mixtapes in 6 months, we're breaking as hard as me. I don't bother with these, don't let these bother me. They see pictures, they say goals, bitch, I'm who they tryna be. Look, I might just chill in some babes, I might just chill with your boo, I might just spill on your babe.
Come back and break, right? We're back and break. I just rushed the break just because of that crap. Don't make fun of my chips, dude. These pumpkin chips are like that. You're listening to the Urban Sports Team with Ray, Real Team, myself, Wally. The Redskins schedule came out a couple weeks ago. By looking at the schedule, because I got it in my face right now. Which games stand out? For me, I'm trying to think. Which games? The Cardinals game kind of stands out to me off the bat. The first game of the season. Sam Bradford's the quarterback. And you may have... what's his name? Josh Rosen. He may play. 1-2. It could be like, you know, a difficult game. Because it's a tough schedule. You got the Colts on the schedule. We got the Falcons too, I believe, right? Falcons on the schedule. You know, Ray's going to probably watch that game. Talk trash. It's at FedEx, right?
That's right.
Yeah, Ray's going to talk trash and annoy.
The game for me is Thanksgiving Day.
Cowboys.
At Dallas. Yep. 4:30.
Wouldn't it be cool they got Dez Bryant for that game? Because nobody wants him.
That's what the reports are.
What, now? That's what they're saying
know
now?
That no one...
Yeah, that nobody... The reports are nobody wants him. I don't really believe that for some strange reason. I feel like...
I think he's going to end up in... I still think he's going to end up in Green Bay.
In Green Bay?
With a minimal contract.
I think so, too. I think Green Bay's a good option for him. Why not play with a great quarterback? Like, why not?
Games that stand out to me is at New Orleans in primetime. You had New Orleans beat last year and lost a 10-point lead in the last 4 minutes of the game. You also have Cam Newton coming into the building the week after on a short.
That game stands out because Carolina owns the Skins late.
I'm so looking forward to seeing the Redskins face off against Saquon Barkley, which looks like they play at the Giants the 28th. Mm-hmm. And then here against the Giants, when do they play the Giants here?
December 9th.
December 9th. That's a long time. Maybe we can cover that game. We'll see Saquon Barkley in person. That would be great. He's such a great athlete.
Another game. Go ahead, Ray.
No, go ahead. You good.
Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, healthy. That'd be a good game, too.
In D.C.
Ooh, I like
that's
that.
That's a good game,
so
too.
That could potentially have some fantasy implications.
Yeah, it is. Fantasy football.
We'll get Deshaun Watson, one of us.
I probably will. It probably won't be me. I'll probably get Phillip Rivers. You know how I do.
The winningest losing quarterback in life right
now. Greater fantasy football. He helped me win a championship. But
I wasn't here for you. I didn't hear your draft analysis. Did you give one?
Yeah, I actually was. Yeah, I thought it was a good draft. We had Fred Smoot on to talk about the draft.
Oh, he showed up?
He showed up.
He posted this time?
Yeah, he did. Showed
20 minutes
it.
Late, but yeah,
he showed up.
I wasn't here for it.
Yeah, he showed up. But yeah, I agree with him.
Shut down on
he thought it was the best. Yeah, I know. he thought it was the best draft in, I want to say, 10 years.
Wow, 10 years?
Mm-hmm. He talked about the draft in 10 years.
Well, with the 2008 draft, you don't have anyone from that draft class still around, right?
No. No, is that wait.
No,
when did
no.
Trent Williams? When did Trent Williams come?
No, not 2008. I'm thinking about I was thinking about the draft that where you had those 3 second round picks and they ended up being.
Oh, Malcolm Kelly, Devin Thomas. that was the worst draft ever.
Yeah,
that's
what I'm thinking about. Yeah, that's probably the worst.
That's the worst.
Was that Serato too?
Definitely Serato. Mm-hmm.
He was horrible.
That was the worst draft.
Now he's on the radio in Baltimore. Man, I'm telling you.
Let me ask you this though.
Go ahead. Ask
what. Why are you not on the radio? That big guy.
Be a little serious here.
No, all jokes. Go ahead.
Change the tone for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The allegations that came out last week. About the cheerleaders. As a fan, how do you feel potentially supporting a misogynistic and some would consider...
Hold on.
Fred Smoot had the boat incident. He'd been on the show twice. Even though he's canceled.
What?
And yeah. He was on the Love Boat, so it don't even matter.
No, you're a trip.
Wally still likes Bill Cosby, too. So
I don't care about Bill Cosby.
No.
I never did like Bill Cosby.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Ever. No, I like Richard Pryor. Richard Pryor's the fry of Bill Cosby. To your point, you know who I am as a dude, right?
Yeah.
Do you think I care?
Wow.
No.
Let's keep 100.
But to me, that's kind of the sad part, though.
But I would never care. I wouldn't care if it was another organization.
Really?
Because at the end of the
day, so you could separate like me. I tell people
morals, dog. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I have a set of morals, a moral compass for me,
uh-huh.
And I tell people all the time, like I can separate. I know this may not be the fitting analogy, sure. But I can separate the art from the artist.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes, like you know, there's something like Kanye West. Some of the comments that he said over the last week.
Yeah.
Some people are going to say automatically say when his album comes out, I'm not supporting Kanye.
Yeah.
But me, I can separate the art from the artist.
Okay.
Now this is another extreme because it deals with potentially misogynistic behavior.
Yeah.
And then during this climate now, currently.
Mm-hmm. With the Me
Too movement.
Me Too movement. Mm-hmm.
I was just curious to know, like, as a fan.
But you
if any of it is validated.
Yeah, if it's true. Because, you know, people
fan,
have
could
been.
Could you see yourself supporting this team?
Yeah, I can. Because I'm cheering the football, the team, the players. I'm not, just like you said, in terms of, like, we're separating the art form.
The art from the artist.
Yeah, from the artist, right? Same thing. I'm watching the actual players. The players had nothing to do with that situation. The players on the football field are playing hard and playing for their team and this, that, and the other. So it's different.
But you're supporting an entity.
I don't buy products or anything. So to be honest with you.
But you attend those games.
To cover to on the grind. So, yeah, to your point again, Will T, to your point, which you just made about Kanye West. I separate the art form from the artist.
Okay.
If you're taking people's passports... To me, that's almost like pimping somebody. You know, like you're going to do this. And if you don't, you know, you're going to be stuck here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to invoke fear into someone is just wrong, especially females.
If true. Because there was reports.
To me, where there's smoke, there's fire. There's been enough reports just across the league about what's going on. with cheerleaders. They're already underpaid. And they're not treated right, regardless of.
We're in a dangerous world where people can lie on you and get and ruin a whole individual's image.
True.
That's what I'm saying.
This isn't the Duke lacrosse team.
No, I'm not talking about Duke lacrosse. No, I'm talking about what happened to the dude in San Francisco. Foster, the inside linebacker.
Well, that's speculation too. She recanted.
I'm just saying, but
and
again,
she started recanting right after they said they weren't going to resign him.
On the flip side, that's not saying that it's speculation. I agree with you, but just saying, just let's say that she lied. Not saying that she did. Just let's say she lied. Again, it's easy nowadays just to cry wolf, and people go with it like it's the gospel, and it messes up your image for a player, messes up your image, and your money for organization can mess
that's,
up your whole
that's,
image.
That's 100% true, mm-hmm. and I do understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, how can I say this? I think too many times. Go ahead, Ray. Why I collect my thoughts.
I think that it's important for all of us not to rush to judgment. I agree with that, because in so many cases, even with Ben Roethlisberger, he was suspended by Roger Goodell, and it turned out he didn't really do anything. I do like it's consistent. It's not a race thing. It's, you know, whether it's Big Ben, whether it's Ezekiel Elliott, no matter who it is, the same type of criticism comes down when it comes to National Football League. Now, the fact that these guys were suspended, I do think the Washington organization should be punished, though, if something's found out to be true, because these players have been unfairly punished at times, you know. But yeah, I think sometimes, like a guy like yourself, you usually are not entitled, but usually take the guy's side first. You're inclined to take the guy's side first. I remember when Chris Henry died, you were saying, what did she do to him, man? You know, but it turned out he had CTE. He was a nutcase. You know what I'm saying? He jumped on the truck trying to kill her and fell off. She didn't do nothing.
Hey, real talk.
Chad Johnson, when he smacked Evelyn Lozada.
Wait,
you and Al was like, we was on the show together. Like, man, she promotes violence I'm trying to do my Al voice. She promotes violence on that show, man. And I'm like, well, yeah, that doesn't make it right that he hit her, though, you know. But
I don't think I made it right that. I think I validated him hitting her, though.
I didn't say you did.
Okay. I'm against any man who puts his hands on a woman.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I'm not saying you're not. I'm just saying a lot of times with public figures, though, you tend to hear it out first.
Yeah, I do. I like to hear it out
first. Guys you want to make.
I do.
But, and here's the thing. We can't judge nobody. Even if somebody makes that mistake,
mm-hmm.
you know, who says that we're better than them?
Yeah.
We're not. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying the NFL needs to be consistent in the way that they go about investigating, the way they go about punishing people. And again, I think there needs to be more representation, more resources, and just – even, you know, better treatment for cheerleaders in general.
Well, I finally collected my thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
I think even though there's a lot of people, people use the term fake news.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Anytime they do.
They do.
Anytime a credible journalistic institution like the New York Times puts out an article
mm-hmm.
as such, I think it's been vetted and it's been validated.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. Now, is it 100% truth? I don't know. Like I said, I'm waiting until, you know,
all the information comes out.
We make a judgment. But I will say this: if Roger Goodell and Daniel Snyder and Bruce Allen don't get together and someone conducts an internal investigation and finds out what really happened, and there's no punishment levied if it's found out to be true.
Mm-hmm.
It'll just go to show you that just how the NFL and Washington are totally tone deaf.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you have a situation like this, and then you also have on the back of the Me Too movement.
Yeah.
If you just kind of sweep this under the rug, there's no additional reporting. There's mm-hmm. no saying we've, you know, done a thorough investigation. We've identified those bad actors and we've gotten rid of them out of our organization. If there's nothing like that comes out of it, then I think they're doing it's totally tone deaf, and they're doing a big disservice to themselves from a PR standpoint.
Well, the NFL's been already tone deaf with what's going on within the whole movement anyway, within the national anthem or whatever.
But this is the thing. Do people really care about social issues when it comes to the NFL?
No, like, that's what I'm saying.
Levying to being like the...
But you don't... No,
to levying punishment when it comes to social issues.
No, No one really cares. Like, I mean, we just
people care about that football.
We care about our football. Let's keep it 100. That's what it is.
You guys care about
your football. I care about football. No, I'm talking about you. It's on me. I care about my football. I like to have my sports. Well, in terms of, you know, I just like I care about my sports, being entertained. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
in terms,
I want to, and I wonder, and there's nothing wrong.
If somebody
that
wants to stand for something, I have no issue with that. Like, they should stand for it. I don't think you should like be like punished or whatever for standing for your rights or whatnot. But when it comes to football, I care about football. I care about basketball. I care about baseball. I care about the sport.
It's a very slippery slope when it comes to just caring about sports, in my opinion, because so much goes on in various sports on both the collegiate and professional level, just like the college basketball scandal, just like
Cashews bombs,
just like
this,
just like the steroid scandal in baseball. You know, if you turn a blind eye to these things, it's a mistake on our part. We continue to support dishonesty and cheating.
That's true.
Because it's the opposite of what we learn and what we want to teach those around us, our children, whoever. It could be younger family members like your nieces, your nephews, you know, whatever it is. I think it's a mistake sometimes that we overlook these things. But again, I don't want to be judgmental, and I want to also make sure I forgive people because nobody's perfect. But we need to address it. And I think this needs to be addressed. And hopefully it will be.
And that's real talk. You're not going to say
whoever,
and that's real
whoever
talk.
Whoever did something wrong should be sentenced to a life of eating these pumpkin chips.
And that's real. Look. Screw you. And that's real talk. Where do you rank Triple G amongst middleweights? We'll talk about that after the break. You listen to the Urban Sports Thing.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Come on, man. And with the local DBC news, Eddie Cooche with a triumphant comeback. But tonight, don't call it a comeback.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Wally, myself, Will T, and Ray. On May 11th, Team Gary Russell was holding an open gym workout at Enigma Boxing Gym from 8 to 9:30 p.m. Enigma Gym is located at 9100 Edgeworth Drive, Capitol Heights, Maryland. What you about to say, Will T? You talking about getting an autograph?
No, you guys are going to be attending the fight May 19th at the MGM National Harbor. I was going to tell people if they spot either one of you to come up, take a picture, get an autograph from you guys. Ray and Wally love their fans.
You trying to go to Open Gym on the 11th?
Oh, that's Friday?
Yeah, Friday.
I think I might. I think I might try to stop that.
All right.
Stop
there. On Saturday, Cinco de Mayo, middleweight champ Triple G KO'd Van Ness. How do you say his name? Matarossian. That's what it is. Matarossian. I got it. Matarossian. In the second round to tie B-Hop's title defense record. Your thoughts about him achieving that accomplishment?
There should be an asterisk because that was some shameful shit. You know, we were all scheduled to get the fight, the rematch that everyone wanted to see, probably the most anticipated fight in boxing, which would have been Triple G versus Canelo. May 5th, Cinco de Mayo in Vegas. But because of the suspension, Canelo had to withdraw, and Triple G still saw fit to continue with the fight on May 5th. But he saw fit to go
with an easy route.
Any man that steps into the square circle, I'm not going to say it's the easy route.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say this. For your 20th defense, I don't think that's necessarily the highest level of competition you could have faced.
Mm-hmm.
You've coming off of a guy who hasn't fought in 2 years, who's coming off of a loss, and who lost two of his last three fights, and who's moving up from 154 to 160. I know that it was only 3 weeks until he could have found an opponent, but there was a guy who gave him probably his toughest fight to date, who was fighting a week or two prior to you.
Jacobs.
Yes, Daniel Jacobs. Mm-hmm. Now, could there have been some type of financial arrangement, some type of arrangement which could have been worked out where Triple G could afford Daniel Jacobs for to tie B-Hop's record? We never know. Right? Yeah. We never know. Mm-hmm. But I will say this. I think that anyone who watched that fight, it only lasted two rounds. Triple G definitely started out that fight knowing that he could beat this dude, and Vaness caught him twice, and that's then when Triple G woke up, and then after that, that's when Triple G proceeded to get the knockout against him, leaving a lot of people wanting more, a lot of people desiring more.
It's a terrible fight.
Look, it's not the fight that everyone anticipated nor wanted.
Yeah.
But it, you know, second seeing Triple, round. But the great thing is, the people saw Triple G get a knockout. Mm-hmm. And him getting a knockout, potentially going into a fight against Canelo, is something that's going to excite people, because he hadn't had a knockout his last two fights against Daniel Jacobs and Canelo.
So would you say that he fights different when he sees lesser competition? Like, it's easier for him to knock someone out rather than when he's fighting somebody who's more of a
that's
boxer?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Okay, about to say. Uh-huh. That's what I'm
against
saying.
Elite level competition.
All right.
You don't see Triple G getting a knockout against elite level competition, against guys who are more technically savvy in the ring. And not to say that Vaness wasn't technically savvy. I'm just saying, because Vaness was a former Olympian.
Yeah.
But he lost two of his last three fights, and he's coming off of a two-year layoff.
Yeah. It's just wild that he took that. The Cinco de Mayo is supposed to be a fight that nowadays, because of Mayweather, I call it because of Mayweather, it's like one of the big days of boxing.
I mean, well, it's always been one of, if you look back historically, it's always been one of those weekends, or that Saturday has always been a big fight weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, it has been. No, but Floyd Mayweather definitely, over the past 10 years, has definitely coined it as one of his days.
It seems like it. Yeah. So where do you rank Triple G amongst all-time middleweights right now?
Historically, I don't want to take anything away from him, but let's be realistic. Looking at over the 20 fight span, the caliber of opponents that he's faced, you definitely can't put him up there as one of the greatest middleweights ever.
Yeah.
Even though he has 20 straight
title defenses.
Yeah, title defenses. You definitely not putting him in the top five.
Not better than Joe Calzaghe.
Joe Calzaghe was 175.
He's 175?
No, excuse me, 168.
Okay.
You're definitely not putting him as one of the top five middleweights of all time.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be a stretch for you to put him in top 10. Maybe get him at 12 or 15.
Oh, damn. 12. Well, yeah, I think it's about fair. A lot of people have that.
He hasn't had that signature win,
yeah,
per se. He hasn't had that signature win because that was a draw. Because his fight against Canelo was a draw.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have that signature win. He had to dig deep and get a victory. He hasn't had that yet. And so, that may be because he's just been that much better than the level of competition he's faced.
That's true. So on Twitter, Chris Brown says, depends on asking the question, where does Triple G rank? Depends on where you rank certain fighters who moved up from 147 to 154 later in their careers. But he probably somewhere towards the bottom of the top 10 after Hagler, Ray Leonard, Ray Robinson, B-Hop, Roy Jones, Oscar, Hearns, etc.
Roy Jones didn't fight at 160.
No, yeah. That's why he's a light heavyweight weight. So yeah. So I'm gonna take away Roy Jones from his list. Sorry, Chris, that's wrong. It's incorrect. But nah, I mean, other than Roy Jones, I think that's a fair assessment though, right?
Yeah.
All right, well, it's about time to wrap this show up, fellas.
Please go to my Twitter page at @HermanSports_Ray. It's a matter of importance right now.
Why is it important?
I just put something out there, man, that the world needs to see. Put it that way.
It's the chips. I knew it. It's the chips. He took a picture of the chips. He's dirty as hell. No.
Never buy those chips, please.
I knew it. I told you.
Remember, May 19th.
May 19th. We in the building, man.
Look for Wally. Look for Ray. Come and get an autograph.
Look, man, we trying to do what my man Will T did with B-Hops years ago, man. He was out there being the Urban Sports Scene reporter for the Stars. You know what I mean? For the actual Hall of Fame of B-Hop. You know what I mean? Will T was doing big things.
No, I mean
the best the best boxing blog in the business.
No, I would like to attend it live, but it's a dual site fight, so there's Badu Jack versus Adonis Stevenson, and then there's the Gary Russell Jr.
Oh, okay.
Diaz fight. So I want to see both of the fights. Mm-hmm. So I feel as if I go to the Gary Russell Jr. fight, I'm going to miss.
Got you.
The Adonis Stevenson fight. So I want to be able to see respect both fights. That, so bro. I'll be at home watching.
We respect that, man. We respect that. Anyway, man, you've been listening to Urban Sports saying.
The ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
And make a lead us out, big homie.